Hey, I'm really excited today because I've got Carl Smith. And Carl Smith, who I've known for the last few years, is an incredible leader in our community of founders in specifically digital services. Today, he runs the Bureau of Digital, and he has so much experience around leading successful teams in delivering projects for clients that the amount of value that he brings to leading our community is incredible. So today, I wanted to talk with him a little bit about what it's like to work with founders and his passion around helping the founder community.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit
and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
Carl, welcome.
Well, you know, I just want to hear you keep talking. That was amazing. I'm going to send that to my mom.
Well, I've known you now for, what is it, 6 years, 5, 6 years?
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just amazing when I met you. And we got into the OwnerCamp community, just the way you would lead these conversations, even before you took over officially, it was a natural fit.
Well, I was always the agitator when I was an attendee because people would challenge my base of beliefs. And rather than say, that's an interesting point, I would say, wrong. You're wrong, sir, because there's no way I could be wrong. And then over time, you start to realize, actually, everyone in this room is really successful. We could learn a lot from each other if we just calm down.
It's true. So, Carl, you've been leading the Bureau of Digital for how long now?
You know, I have been a partner, was a partner for 3 years and actually took over just about a year and a half ago.
Okay. Wow. It seems like longer. You've done a lot in that short time.
I've put a good face on a lot of effort. So, and this is the key to being a good founder is you deflect any praise. So make a note of that. Don't accept praise. No, thank you. I truly appreciate that. You know, it's one of those things. I was an attendee in 2012, and that's how I first came into the Bureau. And when I realized there were other people like me who didn't have anybody to lean on, it became addicting. In a positive way, I hope, for myself anyway. And then you just start to realize the motion and the energy and the inertia that's going on here. And that was why for me, you know, a year and a half ago when Greg Hoy wanted to get back to Happy Cog and make it everything it could be with what he had learned, it was a no-brainer. You know, I've got to keep it moving. So I appreciate it. And, you know, it is one of those things that when you're passionate about something, you can get a lot done fast.
That makes sense. So tell us a little bit about the Bureau for the folks who don't know about it.
Sure. So the Bureau was founded in 2012. It kind of spawned out of Happy Cog, a great shop out of Philadelphia. And they were realizing, the people that were running Happy Cog, that they didn't have a community to lean on. They knew that designers and developers had a lot of community, a lot of events, things of that nature. And they were like, you know what? We need something for owners. And that was actually how I got connected with them, was they reached out to me. And it was this very simple email that just said, hey, if you can get yourself to Portland, we'll put you up for a few nights and we'll have a conversation with 20 other shop owners. And I replied back with two words, why me? And they replied back, you're doing different things and you're either full of shit or you're onto something. And I was like, okay, I'll be there. And so anyway, we had this first event. I'm still connected with a lot of those people. Somebody else mentioned, it was Brett Harn, had said, you know what, digital PMs don't have a community. So we start doing events for digital PMs. And now, you know, fast forward 5 years later, it's not only events for people in the digital space that don't have their own community, creative directors, operations people, digital PMs, heads of QA, tech leads, all this kind of stuff, but it's really a community. I mean, that's what's happened. And I think there have been over 1,600 shops now that have come through, and there's a core of about 300 people that I see active almost every day helping each other out. And you know, that's the biggest thing about it, Kareem, is when you realize how many people are out there helping each other, it doesn't feel like work anymore. It feels like responsibility. And I think that's what's allowed me to just stay focused in the midst of all of the energy that's flying around so that the Bureau can continue to grow as a community that allows us to get together in person as well as help each other every day.
But what's your passion about this?
You know, my passion is being able to share everything I learned running a shop over 14 years, the good and the bad. So I was in an advertising shop for about 14 years, left that to start my shop. And that first third of my career, when I was at the advertising agency, I learned a tremendous amount from a woman named Melanie Husk. She was my boss, probably the only boss I've ever had, or at least the only person in charge of me that I listened to. And she was amazing, and I learned so much. And then that second third, I put all of it into engine, and we did pretty well. We didn't do nearly as well as some of the shops that are in the Bureau right now, but we did really well. And so now I see this final third as the opportunity to share what I've learned. But what really happened, I guess it was about 3 years ago, and my youngest daughter, who at the time would have been 11, came outside and asked me what I wanted people to remember me for. And I was like, what do you mean? She goes, when you're dead, you know, gone. Like, what is it you want people to remember? And first of all, morbid. But second, I just said, you know, I want people to know that I helped a lot of people, you know? I mean, and she said, how many? How many people do you want to help? I was like, I don't know. And then because she was raised around digital agency and digital agency thought, she said, how does it scale? And I went, all right, give me some time. I came back to her the next day and I said, you know what? I want to put people together who can help each other. I don't want to be the one that has to help. I just want to build the place where they can help each other. And that was when I realized the Bureau was that place. So if you ask about my passion and what I get out of it, it's when I see somebody that has four people on the bench and they're worried that they're going to have a layoff and they're able to find somebody who's overloaded with work that those people can take and nobody loses their job, right? Or you've got a shop that is struggling to figure out how to get a client to correct a bad behavior. And you've got five shops who swing by to say, hey, we had this. This was our solution. When you start to see that you're truly having people get better, and it's because they're connected through something that you help facilitate, it's amazing. I mean, it's a job, but it's amazing.
Carl, it's amazing that we've had so many storms this year. You and I are both part of the community that we've seen everybody reach out, whether we're talking about Harvey in Houston or Irma that hit Florida. You were directly affected by the latter. Tell me a little bit about, I guess let's go in chronological order, in Houston, what kind of support were digital founders helping each other with? How did the community come together?
You know, it was mainly emotional support. You know, people get upset when you say, send your thoughts and prayers. And I get that. But a lot of people, it was just saying, hey, we're here if you need us. And a lot of the shops turned out didn't really need the support, but they had that comfort level. There was a safety net. There was somebody there if they needed it. And then a tremendous amount of shops did make donations. I say tremendous amount. I don't know. That was my perception. I don't know specifics around it. But I do know that when I took a look a couple of times, I did see names that I knew that were donating directly to Houston. So I'd say that was really it. It mainly emotional, but then also a financial component for the community that those shops lived in.
You had shared with me that there was also another more direct way that folks were possibly even sharing their pipeline. Tell me a little bit about that.
For sure. So there were definitely some private conversations of people who had more than they could handle. And they contacted me about it and said, hey, you know, if these other shops need anything. So I was kind of the broker, and playing that role, I know that none of those transactions, I think, actually happened. But again, it was one of those where it was like, it was a good to have. There was one shop that was a little bit fresher, and there were some connections there. So they may have taken some of those leads and done some of that business. But that was definitely another part of it.
The other storm was Irma, and Irma hit you directly and personally. How was that?
It was bad. One of those things when you've lived through a bunch of hurricanes, and like an idiot, I have, you know, you can leave the place where these things hit, but I haven't yet. It was difficult on a lot of levels. One, you never know what these storms are going to do, and you become hypnotized by all of the things you know like the Weather Channel, your local news. They're just trying to get your eyeballs, right? And I say this with all the love in the world. I actually went and looked at every local forecast, like up and down the coast.
Yep, you just went through this.
And each one was showing the model where it hit them directly, right? So it's like, okay, got it. You've got to make sure that everybody's knowing that it's coming to you. But we had a big event that was coming up with BizDev Camp. And so I had to make sure that all of the 30 attendees knew that we were keeping an eye on the storm. We had a local shop there in Miami that we were trying to make sure they were okay. I had to prepare everything for my family so we'd be okay. And you prepare to be out without power. You prepare all those types of things. You send an away message that basically says, hey, I'm out buying water and plywood and have a great day. And then when the storm hit, it actually, yeah, we lost a 10-ton live oak along with a 2015 Nissan Rogue, if anybody wants one real cheap.
But it's flat now, right?
Oh, man. It got, when you have a 10-ton anything fall on a car, it's pretty impressive. But yeah, so even now we're in the recovery phase of dealing with insurance and replacing things that have been damaged. Nothing compared to what Puerto Rico's going through. Nothing to compare with what Houston's still suffering with. I mean, you find out, just a little side note, but working with Progressive on my car, I was talking with them and they said there was something like 200,000 automobiles totaled in Houston. Right? Because once the floorboard gets wet, it's done. So all of those cars just toss. And you start to think about the infrastructure of these communities. It was September 11th was the day after the storm. And today, which we're in like early October, I still haven't met with the homeowner's adjuster for my insurance. So all of these things are starting to happen. But at the same time, you have to keep running your business because you know, that insurance isn't going to cover much and you're going to have to pay for it yourself. But it's one of the biggest struggles, I think, is that balance between continuing the recovery, seeing that there's another storm out there that they haven't named yet, and knowing that you've got to keep everything else going, especially when you're a small team. I think that's always the biggest challenge. You're going to take these lumps, but that doesn't mean you can't get that blog post up and ready for everybody to see.
Did you get any support from the community?
For sure. I would say the biggest support was from all of the attendees at BizDev Camp. Had anybody wanted to cancel and not reschedule, we would have given their money back in a heartbeat, right? No questions asked. If a lot of them had wanted to do that, it would have been a huge, huge impact. We would have survived it, but it would have hurt really bad. But nobody ever even came close to thinking that. All they talked about was how happy they were that we were looking after them while we were trying, while we should be taking care of ourselves, how we don't need to worry about it right now, get back to us next week. But at the same time, you've got to make sure that your contractual obligations with the venue and all this kind of stuff, you're figuring out. So the support from the attendees was unbelievable. I'll also say friends like Greg Hoy, who were there for emotional support and to offer a lot of support with other things like, you know, jumping in to help out with stuff or whatever it might take. So the community itself was just unbelievable. And the outreach, it almost felt like your birthday on Facebook, where suddenly you've got all these messages and you're worried that things are blowing up. And then you go and you check it and you just go, oh, it's my birthday. And everybody's saying happy birthday. It was the same type of thing. It's like anytime I logged into Slack or checked my email, it felt overwhelming. But then I realized this is just an outpouring of love and people saying that they're there if you need anything.
That's incredible. So Carl, outside of helping each other with business metrics, what kind of support should founders be looking at to each other? And what kind of support have you seen within your community?
There's two sides of this. One is when things are going bad and they're going to have a layoff. They know it's the right thing to do. And possibly it's a correction because there are people that should have been let go, but it was uncomfortable. There was worry about culture. The money was okay. But now that things are shifting a little bit, it's like, okay, we've got to take care of these four people or these five people because they're hurting the company. Well, that is a stressful situation. And I have never met an owner or a founder who wanted to hurt people, who wanted to let go of people that had been at one point something they looked forward to, you know, having them on the team. So being able to go into a private channel or being able to go into a channel with people who've had similar experiences as you as a founder and say, hey, I'm about to let four people go. Anybody have any suggestions? Here's the situation. You will see so much activity show up. And a lot of it is just, I'm so sorry. And is there anything I can do to help? And it's just that sense of sympathy. And I've caught hell for this before because people are like, oh yeah, poor owner, right? Yeah, you know what? Yeah, poor owner, because they're taking it personally. They're going to feel like they couldn't figure it out. And the other people who leave, now granted, that hurts, but they're free of it and they're able to move on. Now the flip side of that is when somebody is in a huge growth spurt and they're terrified of their company changing and getting out of control because they want to take on all this work. And it's the same situation. Does anybody have any recommendations for how to grow smart, we're outgrowing our systems? So it's not necessarily business metrics, but it's in some cases even a survival plan because people don't want to turn that down. So that's where you start to see a lot of these, I would even say anecdotal support, because everybody's sharing a story. Everybody's explaining what it was that they went through. And what I love is that I've got all those. I can still jump in and be a part of that and help out, although I don't understand necessarily the way that it's going right now. You know, and the last thing I'll throw in there is that a lot of times it's a place where you can ask people what they're seeing. Because when you're the only one running something, a bump in the night can feel like a huge crash is coming in and you don't know what the noise is. But if you're able to go out and say, hey, how's everybody's fourth quarter? Like you may have seen this, Kareem, in Slack yesterday. One person put out and said, hey, my fourth quarter is on fire. How's everybody else doing so far? And of about 8 or 9 responses, everybody was like, it is out of control, right? And one was like, well, it's not bad. But you start to realize this is a place where I can just ask people, how are things outside of my little construct of a world? And I think having those voices out there is huge in helping you sleep at night.
It's very interesting to see how that competitive nature sort of breaks down and people are actually sharing. When I worked on Madison Avenue and those types of shops, it was always about fronting about how great things were. In this community, I've seen people actually straight out say, hey, my pipe needs help. And people actually answer that.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if it's because so many people have met in person and spent time together, the way that the events are curated. I don't know if it's just borrowed trust from the bureau, or maybe it's the industry. When I was in advertising, man, we never talked to anybody else we thought might be up against. And I remember the day I was out of the shop I worked at, I got an email from somebody that said, welcome to the outside. And I realized I've never talked to these other people and they're all in my same community, my same city. When you start looking at the web industry, I think it's a lot, specifically digital services, I think it's a lot like the film industry from the 20s in that there was so much work that if Universal had a team on the bench, they would let MGM know. And if MGM needed people, they just send them over there. You know, I mean, that's well documented the way that because Hollywood was so on fire in the 20s that all of those shops worked together. And I think we've got some of that. And hopefully we don't lose it as we mature as an industry. I really don't think we will.
Well, we definitely do have it now, at least. I mean, I look back at quite literally the time that you and I met in Portland. It was within a few months of that I took over. I'd already taken over when we met Crowd Favorite, but I took over as CEO of the larger group. And Alex announced that he was sick and was going to have to stop working again. The outpouring of help and offers of help that weren't financially motivated were incredible. And it wasn't competitive at all. It was a beautiful thing to see. People were offering pipeline. They were offering support in production, anything they could, because they just wanted to make sure that we, as Alex's team, were taken care of. And it was inspiring to see that kind of outreach and an offer of help.
Yeah, I remember Greg Hoy, who was running the bureau at the time, reached out to me and said, "We got to do something." And I can't remember exactly. I know there was a fund me page, some sort of a page for his family. And I know we did stuff there and I know we reached out, but it was, that was the beginning. The first time I realized that there is a responsibility here beyond anything of a work nature. And you know, when Jen Derry announced that she had the brain tumor, I remember waking up that morning, seeing the announcement, but seeing that I had been contacted by six different people in the Bureau, literally right before the announcement, right after the announcement, they had heard other ways, and basically just asking me what we should do, right? Because everybody identifies with being part of the Bureau. And it was one of those things where it's just like, there's not enough, but just the fact that you can get everybody together, and if it is some sort of a donation for a group, or if it is support through, you know, alleviating business needs. I mean, I had Jen on a podcast shortly after that about, you know, she had a successful business, she's got two kids, now she's got a brain tumor. Like, how do you get through all that? So even sharing those difficulties with others so that they'll be able to have something to learn from if something happens to them, I think is critical.
And also the fact that I'm speaking to you today, it goes outside of just founders of agencies. I think this whole digital realm is finding a new way to collaborate and work together, because I'm speaking to you today on the Zen Founder podcast because Sherry's dealing with some stuff. So some of her friends have come together to help keep the podcast moving for a couple of weeks. And just seeing how there was literally a line of volunteers to help out and say, how can I help? How can I take charge and take something off your plate? This is a new dynamic on competition or collaboration. And do you think it has something to do with more of these companies working remote and having remote workers and being able to connect with people without necessarily always being in the same room?
You know what? I think it does have something to do with it, because everybody kind of becomes part of who you are. We had somebody at Engine once say, because we were distributed, they said, do you have any idea how sad it is that when I shut my laptop, my world seems to disappear? And so the fact that we have a world inside there, I think is huge. And it does, again, with the face-to-face interactions, like having met Sherry. If I hadn't met Sherry at Owner Summit, I don't know that it would mean as much to me when you tell me. Not that I'm being a jerk, but it would just be like, well, it's a name.
No, absolutely. I think the relationships are forged by being together personally. I think without that first contact, or even if you meet online first and then get together physically, you absolutely need that. And the events that the Bureau does, I met Sherry at another event originally, like literally that physical presence of really understanding somebody and getting to know them creates a basis. But the fact that we're able to extend that and continue that virtually, I mean, look at us. We know each other pretty well. And in the last 5 years, we've spent less than 2 total weeks together.
Well, to tell a secret, when I was in Redondo, I did kind of stake out your place for a couple of nights. I was just want to see how you were. So, you know, it's just important to me. No, you're right. And that's, I think that's the important thing, is that we have those shared experiences. You know, an amazing thing happened when we did the interviews for the first Digital PM Summit, and a video was put together afterwards. And the videographer found that everybody said this one phrase, almost exactly the same. And so he put it all together in this like 30-second snippet. You've got 7 or 8 people saying, I found my people. Well, these are my people. I finally found my people. And I think that if you were to sum it up, like, these are your people, they understand. They may not have gone through what you've gone through, but they thought about it, or they've gone through something similar. And when you put everybody together collectively, that consciousness, that understanding, that experience set, it's just going to improve everybody.
So, Carl, do you see a difference between instant messaging and sort of asynchronous methods of communication and helping founders and folks connect online?
You know, I do, and it's based on the nature of the message. So there's a lot of things that we used to would have just asked the internet, but now we have a subset of people who understand. And so it's a quicker question, like, has anybody dealt with this clause? And that goes in the instant messaging category, because people are asking a question, they're looking for something. But if somebody has more of a long form or a more complex question or need or observation, it almost always seems to go in that asynchronous bucket. And I don't know if it's because, and I'm going to use Slack and Basecamp as the examples, because that's what my life is. if it's because Basecamp is just so much better at long form. But that's really where I see the difference. It's now I will see people do the long form, more deep stuff in Slack, but that I think is as much a personal preference as anything else. For the most part with the community, where I see the line drawn is a daily question versus a possible shift in how I run my shop, where that daily question's going instant messenger and that huge question is going to go in the more asynchronous, I kind of want to hear from everybody when they get a chance kind of a format.
How do those tools compare with today? People take video for granted. We used to say after 3 emails, get on the phone back in the day. Now, in the company I run, we demand that people get on video so that we actually have the nonverbal cues. How do you find that virtually people are being able to communicate well online? And when you're running a business or you're being trying to be a good founder and a good communicator, have you seen in the community where people are being able to make those distinctions? They're getting value out of using today's video rather than just phone calls or instant messaging?
Yeah, I would say definitely. And when I was running Engine, I'll back up to there. Even if it wasn't going to be live, video had such a role to play in important messages, especially if you're distributed, because of exactly what you said. Those visual cues, the way that you say something feels different when you know you're being seen. And it almost has, even though there's nothing at all to make this real, it almost has a more transparent sense when you see the video. And I would say using Zoom, Hangouts, Skype, whatever, now in Slack with the videos, when you do video, there is just that sense of being a little bit closer. I don't know if you read this, and I'll see if I can find the article, but they've shown that, you know, it had been on the internet, on text messages, things of that nature, that we did not have any real chemical reaction as humans as we did if we were in a physical proximity to another human, right? The release of different chemicals, the feel-good stuff. But now they've shown that with emoticons and emojis and animated GIFs, we actually are releasing some of these chemicals, right? So it's like our bodies are starting to adapt to the technical messaging. We're starting to smile more. We're starting to do things like that, which is a little bit creepy, but kind of cool. But I think also when you look at it, like what you said, if you email 3 times, that's a phone call. We used to always say, you know what? If you ask somebody to read the email before you send it, that's a phone call. And I would definitely say now that's a video call because you need to see each other. But the difficult thing, especially get back to remote, is when you have to fire somebody who's across the country on a bad video connection. Oh man, I can't tell if you're laughing or crying. What are you doing over there, Frank? You know, it's one of those things that, but I will say with Zoom, the quality has gotten so much better.
Absolutely. So Carl, as the leader of the Bureau of Digital, you see a lot of interactions between founders. What do you see as the value of their interactions?
It's a great question. I think the real value is knowing that people understand. If you're among family and they've never run a digital agency, and they don't understand what kind of a crazy hot mess it can be, they're gonna want to help and they're gonna try to give suggestions, but it's not gonna be relevant on any level. But if you're with people who understand, even if you're not talking about running your shop, even if you're not talking about some difficulty that you're having, the opportunity for them to tell you and for you to feel like you're contributing and you're helping. I mean, that's the crazy thing about us as Homo sapiens, as primates, right? We have this crazy need to belong, but we also want to be really independent. And these things don't work well together, but then sometimes they do. And I think this is one of those perfect examples of being able to be your own person, but also being able to be part of a support group.
Yeah, it's something that really works well in the community that we're seeing emerge with digital founders. Carl, we've talked a lot about how you started your business and then you learned how to run your business after you launched it. That's an amazing story. I'm curious, I haven't asked you before, at what point did you start to learn how to manage people and communicate with people as a leader in your team? Was that after you started the business or did you have a background in it?
So I was a theater major.
So you're saying you're full of drama, right?
I am. And I was so scared of my first job at the agency that I would just read a bunch of books and figure out what those books said and kind of script out whatever I was going to say during the meeting. Often like an improv situation, but with pre-rehearsed dialogue. And sadly, it elevated me really quickly. I think I learned really it was I started my job at the agency when I was 22. And I would say when I was around 25 or 26, a group came in called Stop at Nothing. We jokingly called them Stop While There's Something Left. And they were a group that would come in and consult on the structure of your organization. And I worked for somebody else at the time. And they interviewed all 40 people in the company to find out who was the most important person in the company and who was the least important, right? I had the dubious distinction of being both the most important and the least important. I was the most polarizing person in the place. And when that hit me and I realized that what it meant was I treat people differently, I would be given an assignment and hell or high water, I didn't care about bodies in my wake. I was going to get that damn project done. And that opened my eyes that there was a better way. And also that I was probably going to get fired if I wasn't careful. So as I started watching the other people around me, I started seeing how they motivated teams. And I started making sure that I would always sit with the people doing the work before I went to the clients to explain why the work was good. And I actually started to understand what I was doing instead of having to read a book or having to make up some back into some rationale. It was amazing. One thing I learned really quickly was if you have a team that's going to be working late, you don't go home, right? It doesn't matter if they work for you or you work for them or you work together, however it is, you get pizza and beer, pizza and Coke, whatever, but you're there with them. When we went to Launch Engine, we were four equal owners to start. And over time, everybody wanted out and I hung out. Seems to be a history of me joining a team and everybody wants out and I stay. I don't know what that is, Kareem.
Well, at some point, I'd love to do a talk with you, and maybe we bring somebody else on, but I'd love to do a talk with you about getting your company ready for exit.
Oh, man.
As a founder, what that does to you psychologically, because we've had that talk.
Yeah, I think I missed my exit three times. I kept doing a U-turn.
Yep. Well, Carl, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Kareem. This is amazing. And I look forward to checking out the other Zen Founder podcasts.
Yeah, what Sherry does is amazing here, and it really helps the founder community sort of understand beyond the business how to relate to each other. And I think it goes really hand in hand with what the Bureau of Digital and you are bringing in to this community. So thank you for everything you do on a daily basis.
You're most welcome, and thank you for saying that. It's truly a gift.
If you're interested, folks, please go by and check out the Bureau of Digital for agency founders. It's a great resource for making sure that you have a community and you can connect. And it's a wonderful, wonderful place to really deepen your understanding of how to be a good founder and be a good business owner and lead teams better, in my opinion, and work with clients in a much more holistic fashion.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.